So this morning's reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 5. We are continuing with the story of the activities of Shakshi Gopal. So the text on the board is 28, but we left off at text 25. So I'll read up to text 27, and then we'll recite 28 together. So, text 25. The older Brahman replied, "My dear boy, do not doubt me. I will give you my daughter in charity. I have already decided this." The young Brahmana said, "You have a wife and sons, and you have a large circle of relatives and friends. Without the consent of all your friends and relatives, it is not possible to give me your daughter in charity. Just consider the story of Queen Rukmini and her father Bhishmaka." Okay, so we are on verse 28. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami, Srila Prabhupada. King Bhishmaka wanted to give his daughter Rukmini in charity to Krishna, but Rukmini, his eldest son, objected. Therefore, he could not carry out his decision. Purport. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 52, text 25. Bandhanam ichhate dato krishnaya bhagini nirpa tatha nirvaraya krishna Vide Rukmi Chidaya Amanyate. King Bhishmaka of Vidarbha wanted to offer Lord Krishna his daughter Rukmini, but Rukmi, his eldest of the five sons, objected. Therefore, Bhishmaka withdrew his decision and decided to offer Rukmini to the king of Cheri, Shishupal, who was the cousin of Krishna's. However, Rukmini conceived a trick. She sent a letter to Krishna asking him to kidnap her. Thus, in order to please Rukmini, who was his great devotee, Krishna kidnapped her. Thus ensued a great fight between Krishna and the opposing party, headed by Rukmini, Rukmini's brother Rukmi. Rukmi was defeated, and because of his harsh words against Krishna, was about to be killed, but he was saved at the request of Rukmini. However, Krishna shaved off all of Rukmini's hair with his sword, and Sri Balaram did not like this. So, and so to please Rukmini, Balaram rebuked Krishna. Om Gyan Atmanandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshusmulmiltam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Vancha Kalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So as we are continuing this story, the activities of Shakshi Gopal, where we are familiar with this story, where the older Brahmana, he was on a pilgrimage to the holy dams, and when he was in Vrindavan, due to his elderly situation, he was having many difficulties in pursuing his continuation with his pilgrimage. At the same time, there was a young Brahmana, very well trained in Brahmanical etiquettes. So he saw this elderly Brahmana, and of course, because he's trained in Brahmanical qualities and understanding, he was well versed that it is his duty to serve the elderly. This is actually Vedic culture. In the Vedic culture, the elderly persons are given a lot of respect and honor, not just because they are older, but because they have experienced life and they have accumulated a lot of wisdom. And therefore, the younger person, when he serves the elderly, by the blessings of the elderly person who becomes pleased by the service, he imparts his knowledge and wisdom onto the younger person. And this is how the continuation of knowledge comes down. Of course, nowadays in modern world, we are shipped off to the school. And when we are in the school, obviously we are young. The teachers are elderly or older than us. But we don't have great respect for them. Even though the teacher is there to help us in educating us according to whatever the education curriculum is, but we are not so much interested in giving respect to the teachers. At least when I was in my school, that was the case. You know, we didn't have any respect for our teachers. But in Vedic tradition, the teacher is considered as one of your gurus, and therefore you have respect for them. And when you show respect, the elderly person or the teacher becomes very much pleased by your knowledge of etiquette and respect. Then he imparts that knowledge. And when he imparts that knowledge then comes down to you, and you'll be able to perceive that knowledge. Otherwise, if you are disrespectful to the teacher will impart the knowledge, but the knowledge will not be perceived to you, and you won't be able to understand the knowledge, although it will be kind of given to you, but you won't realize this knowledge. Because the whole process, whether it is material knowledge or spiritual knowledge, is based on realization. See, otherwise, there is no need to go to school. You can get a whole bunch of books, you know, from Amazon or any of these online sellers, and pick yourself whatever books you want and study them by yourself. But you won't be able to understand them. You will need a teacher who is experienced in knowledge about these scriptures or even material knowledge. And therefore, they are able to impart that knowledge onto you, and then you will be able to realize this knowledge and then practice this knowledge. So here, this young Brahmana understood his duty, and therefore he was serving the elderly Brahmana. And as he was accompanying the elder Brahmana could very well understand that this young man is very much trained in good qualities. And because of the good qualities, he was impressed by him, and he decided that he is an ideal person to whom he can give his daughter in marriage. Now, this was a tradition in the old days, you know, in the very cultural times, where the father is very concerned about the future of his daughter. So he nurtures his daughter very nicely with love and respect and honor up to a certain age. But then he knows that at some stage he has to marry off his daughter, and the custom of household life all continues, and progeny continues, and so forth. So he was very concerned whom his daughter should be given. Now, of course, in the modern times we have this concept of dating, then you get to know the person. And through the process of dating, you get to realize each other's good or bad qualities. Then at some stage you make a proposal, and then you say, okay, now that proposal is accepted by both parties, and then you go to the registrar or whichever customs you are following. You do the ritualistic ceremony and get married. And then hopefully, happily ever, you will be living as husband and wife. But what happens? 1 year, 2 years, 3 years down the road, divorce, and then separation happens. You go your way and I go my way, and then you find another person and another person. And of course, what is Bhagavad Gita saying? That when this kind of situation arises, it creates an unwanted progeny, Varnasankara. And when the unwanted progeny is created, it creates disturbance in the society. So in the Vedic culture, it was very much established fact that the father would look for a suitable husband for his daughter. Now, he would not just willy-nilly select a person, but he would have known that person. And how he knows that person? Because he knows the family of the person. And according to the family, you would know the progeny which has been produced in that family is of a good quality. Prabhupada many times says, you can judge a tree by its fruit. So if the tree is giving good fruit, that means that tree is very good. And from the seed which that tree came, also came from a very good fruit. So it is a continuation of goodness coming down. You won't find something which is not in goodness in that line. So similar in a family, if the family is very cultured, very well established in the principles of Dharma, then the children born of that family will also be trained in good qualities and Dharma. And therefore, the person whom the father is thinking of betrothing his daughter to knows that this person is suitable person and he will take care of my daughter as much as I have taken care of in her youth. So when he marries off the daughter, then he is fully at peace because he knows that the person whom he has given his daughter to in the hand of marriage will take care of his daughter very nicely and not abuse her, but honor and respect. Of course, we have an ideal example, role model of a perfect man and a wife, or husband and wife. Anybody knows that couple? Huh? Sita Ram. You see, Lord Ramachandra is an embodiment of perfection. Of course, he's the Supreme Personality of God, so there is no imperfection in him. But when he appeared to perform his pastimes, he came as Maryada Purushottam, means he came as an ordinary person to establish the principles of how a human being should live his life. And when he got married to Sita Devi, of course, Sita Devi is also an ideal perfection of a woman. She is none other than the goddess of fortune. But she was also playing and acting a role of an ordinary woman, but with all the wonderful qualities. So there is always an example given that young man and young lady, when they want to move on in life and accept household life, then they should be properly trained. And in that household life, they should conduct their lives according to how Lord Rama and Lord Sita were conducting their lives, you know, with full of principles of Dharma. Unless until you follow the principles of Dharma, then you will not be considered a human being. Although you may have a human body, Prabhupada says very clearly that we may have a human body doesn't mean we are humans. Unless you have the qualities of a human being. And what are the qualities of a human being? These are based in Dharma, the principle of Dharma. The Dharma teaches us what is the basic quality of a human being. And that differentiates us between the animals and human beings. Otherwise, as Prabhupada is always emphasizing, animal propensities, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And we are doing the same thing. Then what is the difference between us and them? There's not much difference. Except that our eating, sleeping, mating, and defending is a little bit more polished, more refined. But still, the act is the same. So therefore, we behave like animals. So here, the Brahmana was considering this young man as a suitable person. He did not consider whether he is wealthy or whether he has got a good business. No, he's looking at the qualities of a young boy. Because when you have good qualities, then everything else comes naturally. You know, you may not be rich, but you will honor and respect everyone with the proper understanding, He won't misuse or abuse the persons, because there is the etiquette of respect. So here the Brahmana is very much impressed by this, the older Brahmana is impressed by the younger Brahmana, and therefore he is very much pleased to offer his daughter. But then the young Brahmana says that it is very nice that you want to offer your daughter to me in marriage, but you have family, you have a wife, you have children, you have friends. And here the word is using samati. Samati means that you have to have that permission and acceptance from all these people. Otherwise they will object. Then you won't be able to give me your daughter in marriage. And if that happens, then what happens is that you will be violating the principles of Brahmana culture. Because Brahmanas, one, they don't lie. And two, they don't cheat. So if he doesn't give his daughter in marriage because of pressure from his family, then he would be cheating. And that means he is violating the principles of Brahmana. And when you violate the principles of Brahmana qualities, then it becomes you are an offender to the Supreme Lord. So then the Brahmana, because he's violating his culture, he would become an offender. And therefore the young Brahmana is thinking, I don't want to be the cause of the elderly Brahmana becoming an offender. Although his desire is good, but I don't want him to become an offender. So in similarly, we also in our understanding from this particular aspect should understand in our own lives, we should not be a cause of an offense by others. If someone commits offense against you, that's their problem. Krishna will look after that in his own way. But we should not be the cause of the person committing offense towards you. So we have to be very, very mindful how we act in our actions, in our interactions, that we are not the cause of people causing offense. So that is a very important aspect to learn in our spiritual practice, because many times we may act in such a way that we may create a situation where other person becomes offensive towards you. But because you are practicing Krishna consciousness, and then maybe you have some magnanimity in your heart, say, he's in an illusion, he's under Maya, he's committing offense. I forgive him. But Krishna doesn't take it that way. Krishna looks at it differently. Krishna looks at it, here is a person who has offended my devotee. And therefore, the person who has offended will get severe punishment from Krishna. And because Krishna is going to give him severe punishment for his offense against the devotee, what happens? His spiritual life is in check now. We are the cause of disrupting his spiritual life. Why? Because we create a situation for him to create an offense. Therefore, we have to be very, very careful at every step. We do not create offense against anybody or create a situation where they create offense against us. So this elderly Brahmana, with good heart, with good intention, is going to give his daughter in hand to the young Brahmana, who is full of wonderful qualities. But the young Brahmana, also equally learned in the Brahmanical qualities, is thinking in the interest of the elder Brahmana. And then he's citing the example here of Bhishmaka, the father of Rukmini. Now, the king can do whatever he likes, because he's the king. And in traditional culture, nobody questions the king. King is an absolute personality of his position and power. And in the Vedic scripture, it is said, the king is the representative of the Supreme Personality of the Godhead. Therefore, the king is properly trained. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulana. Is trained in the principles of how to honor his position as a king. Just like, again, the example of Lord Ramachandra. Lord Ramachandra, an ideal king. He is teaching the precept of a perfect king. And therefore, all the kings who are coming in the line of succession are also trained in the principle of kingshipness. So they are all properly trained. And therefore, obviously, they will not make mistakes. They will make judgment according to their experience and also the previous kings who have taught them and the legacy they have left. But of course, nowadays the kings have all gone crazy. They are not really representing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are self-made kings in some sense. Also, the other day we were discussing about Kansa, or rather on Janmashtami we had a play where Kansa was so much influenced by demoniac qualities that he could not wait for his father to pass away and then become the king. He imprisoned his father, great Ugrasena. Now, this is not a good quality, and therefore, because he was demoniac, naturally when he imprisoned his father and took the throne by force, his activities also were very demoniac. But in Vedic tradition, it is said by Prabhupada explains that the kings are the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Bhishmaka is not an ordinary person. He is he is the father of Goddess of Fortune, because Rukmini is not an ordinary personality. She is the Goddess of Fortune. And therefore, if you are endowed with great personalities taking birth in your family as a son or a daughter, then you must be of great lineage and piety. Therefore, the Supreme Lord himself or his counterpart, the Goddess of Fortune, comes as your son and daughter. But here we understand that even though King Bhishmaka was willing to give his daughter Rukmini to the great personality, the Supreme Lord himself, as her husband, but Rukmini had other ideas. He wanted to get his sister married to Shishupal. Now, it is very interesting to see here that although Shishupal is a demoniac person, you know, in a sense, but he is a cousin of Krishna. So you could think, if he is a cousin of Krishna, related to Krishna, how he can be a demoniac person? It's interesting to figure out how Shishupal, who is a cousin of the Supreme Lord himself, but he has got demoniac qualities. Now, of course, if you read further into the Krishna book, it is said that Shishupal became demoniac because he had envy against his brother, cousin brother, Krishna. Because of this envy he had against Krishna, he started developing all these demoniac qualities and hatred towards Krishna. And that is why he was, developing bad qualities. And Rukmini, the brother of Rukmini, was also thinking that Shishupal is a better person than Krishna. Because Krishna was always giving away things generously. And saying, but Shishupal, he is like holding on to things. And of course, Shishupal also his father is also a king. So obviously, Rukmini is thinking that it is a better proposal. And therefore, he objected, and King Bhishmaka thought, okay, since my elder son is objecting to this proposal, I will submit to him. Maybe he has better understanding of Shishupal. Just like as I mentioned, that in the old days, it was not the boy and girl meet and then they get married, but it's the parents who would decide. And then they will follow the principle of Dharma and continue in their household life. So in this relation, I would like to kind of give example of my own parents. My mother, when she was 18 years old, she was proposed to get married to my father. Now, my mother did not know anything about my father. But my mother's father and my father's father were business colleagues. So they know that this family is of a good cultured family. So the two fathers decided, okay, my son and your daughter will get married. So my mother did not know anything about my father, only the name of my father. But she trusted her father, the judgment of her father, that whatever my father is going to do, he's going to do best for me. And on the day of marriage, when the groom's party came to my mother's place where they had set up the mandap and wedding arrangements, even up to that point, she did not see my father. When she was brought into the mandap of wedding, she was all covered and her head was covered right up to the eyes, so she cannot even see anything. And she's sitting there, getting married to this strange character, not knowing. But she had faith in her father, that my father has made a choice for me. It must be the best. Now, can you imagine for a young lady to give herself to someone? And now, you know, when you get married, it is a relationship of intimacy, you know, and closeness and bond. Now, in our friendship, we know, we make friendship with people and we know each other, and that our bond becomes stronger through friendship. And because we know each other, therefore, if the friendship is of a good nature, good quality, then your bond is stronger. Now here, there is no knowledge of the other person. And I'm sure my father is probably thinking, I'm getting married to this girl, but what does she look like? Of course, in those days, you know, there weren't so much cameras and selfies, and you can send on WhatsApp saying, hey, this is what I look like, you know. You know, it was unheard of. You know, in fact, I saw two or three photos of my father and my mother's wedding. It was black and white, you know, and it was very kind of, you know, old type of photographs, which are not quite quality photographs. Anyway, that's not the point I'm trying to make. The point here is that they did not know each other, but they trusted their parents. And then that when the marriage ceremony is done, and then the final ceremony comes where the head covering is removed, and then the sindoor is put in the parting, that's the time the father sees the girl, says, ah! And the girl sees the boy, ah! And then, God, am I going to spend all my life with this person? Can you imagine? Because nowadays, what we do is our attraction is not to the person's personality. The boy looks at the beautiful girl and her beautiful features and says, that's the one I want to get married to. And the girl looks at the man, very, very tall, dark, handsome. Now, I don't know why they say tall, dark, because you're not a dark person. We look for fair skin and handsomeness. We say, tall, dark, handsome man. Anyway, this is it's beyond my understanding. But the point is that this is what we are attracted to. And then when you're attracted to this external beauty, but not the personality, then what happens? There's incompatibility. So the traditional way of getting a boy and girl married is the parents would look at the boy and the girl's qualities, and they know that these two persons will be ideal for each other. And then they get married. So, of course, I asked my mom, Mom, what did you think when you first saw my father's face? And she said, I was in absolute shock. Not that my father was not a handsome man. No, he was quite a handsome young man at the time. But she was feeling, 18-year-old young lady, and of course in those days, there was no mixing of boys and girls, you know. So they don't have any real connection of understanding what the boys are up to, and girls don't, you know, men don't understand what the girls are up to, you know. Now everybody knows everything about everything, and it's just a corrupt society. But she was thinking, how I'm going to spend all my life with this man? But of course, you know, they had a very fruitful marriage, and until death do us part. So, you know, when my mother departed, my father is now a lonely man, and he is thinking how I can live without my mother. But of course, he's carrying on. But he's a sad old man now, you know, always thinking about my mother. I said, Dad, don't worry, you'll be joining soon. You know, he's old, you know, he's an 86-year-old man. You know. Anyway, I can talk to my dad like that, you know. I said, and I don't even call him dad anymore, I just call him old man, you know. I literally call him, old man, how's everything? But I don't call him in English old man, I call him in an African language, Muzay. In African language, Muzay means an old man. So I say, Muzay, how is everything? And, you know, he kind of looks at me and says, you disrespectful son. But I said, look, father, in African language, Muse, you know, where is that? Where is Ian? He's disappeared. In African language, Muse means with great respect, old man, you know. So, anyway, my father understands that. That is with respect I call him. The point is that that is a tradition. And that is why this Brahmana, the older Brahmana, is following that tradition. He's looking at the qualities of the young Brahmana. And when you look at the qualities of the person, then you know that these qualities are matching. Because, of course, the older Brahmana knows his daughter very well. And therefore, he is in full confidence that his daughter will be an ideal person to match with this young Brahmana. And therefore, they meet. So, Nishkincha, remember that on Tuesday, you know, think very carefully. Because after the point of going around the fire, you know, it's point of no return. Lifetime commitment, till death do us part. Remember that. So, anyway, the point is that the young Brahmana is citing the example of Rukmini. Of course, Rukmini is goddess of fortune, and she can see through Shishupal that this character is a debauch. I don't want to spend my life with him. But I want to spend my life with my Lord and Master. Of course, Rukmini, she understands also, because she is goddess of fortune, that Krishna is her eternal consort. And therefore, she wants to be with his eternal consort and not with any Tom, Dick and Harry. You know, especially Shishupal. So, she contrives a system where she sends a letter through her maid. Take this to Krishna. And then the letter comes to Krishna, and Krishna opens the letter. And Krishna says, Rukmini is asking me to kidnap her because she doesn't want to go with Shishupa. And of course Krishna says, I don't want my consort, my eternal consort, to end up with some crazy nutter. So, Krishna, of course, now you have to understand, Krishna, when in his childhood, he is brought up as a Vaishya with Nanda Maharaj. But he's the son of Vasudeva. Vasudeva is the king. He's a Kshatriya. So, the Supreme Lord is exercising his Kshatriya lineage, that in the Kshatriya culture, if a woman approaches the Kshatriya for shelter, then Kshatriya will say, it is my duty. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you must follow your duty, your dharma. If you do not follow your dharma, then it is considered adharma, irreligious. So therefore, the principle of a Kshatriya's dharma is to accept anyone who comes for shelter. So that is why we see in the traditional sense of Kshatriyas, they have more than one wives. It's not that they are lusty, but the women would think that here is a very strong Kshatriya man who will protect me from abuse. So therefore, they would approach an appropriate Kshatriya and take shelter of him. So Rukmini was thinking that here I want to be with Krishna. So then Krishna says, it's my duty, she's asking me. So he kidnaps her and takes her. And of course, Rukmi, the brother of Rukmini, is not very happy. He's saying, how this insolent coward boy has the audacity to kidnap my sister. And of course, once you kidnap the girl, then that girl has to be married to that person who has kidnapped her. So just like Krishna, when he freed the young girls who were captured, and then he said, now that I freed you from your imprisonment, you are free. But they said, now we cannot go anywhere because you are our shelter. And therefore, when Krishna was obliged to marry 16,108 queens. No, because they all asked Krishna for shelter. Anyway, the point is that Rukmi was not happy because he was thinking in his arrogance way that I am a king's son, Kshatriya, and this is a coward boy. What audacity he has to kidnap my daughter, my sister. So he said, I'm going to fight him. Now, little does he know that Krishna is not an ordinary person, you know. So he gets defeated. And also Shishupal is his friend who is also fighting the battle with Krishna. And then all defeated. And then because Rukmini was defeated, Rukmini was defeated by Krishna. And generally Kshatriya, when he defeats the other guy, the other Kshatriya, the end result is that one or the other has to die. Whoever is the victor, of course, lives, and the one who loses has to die. Now, Krishna did not want to kill Rukmi because obviously he is the brother of Rukmini. And then, of course, Rukmini also pleading with Krishna that don't kill him, he's my brother. Even though Rukmi was trying to marry her off to a demoniac Shishupal, still she had that brotherly love for her brother. And therefore she said, please, don't kill him. And Krishna says, okay. Since you are requesting me not to kill him, I will not kill him. But what I will do is next best thing, which is as good as killing him, is take all his hair off. You know, so Krishna with his sword went, chuk, 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 and shaved all his hair off. And it is considered for a king, when the head is shaved, that is his pride, like a crown. You know, when you take your crown off, then it is an insult. Now, this is the permanent crown of the locks of your hair. And as Prabhupada mentions, in the material world, hair is considered the object of beauty. In fact, if you look at the world, they spend so much money on hair and hairstyling than anything else. So, Rukmi's hair was all shaved off, and that is as good as killing him. But then Balaram, he was kind of thinking that this is not a very good act, Krishna. You have done a mischievous act here. You have insulted this person. So Krishna is been rebuked by Balaram and chastised. Of course, Balaram has a right because he's the elder brother. So they again, it's out of brotherly love, the chastisement. It wasn't out of spite. But the point is that Rukmi's hair was shaved off, and that was as good as killing him. So In all, there is a system of Vedic culture where one can do things appropriately. Just like this, another story which comes to my mind from the Mahabharata is that during the battle of Kurukshetra, Yudhishthira Maharaj was a little upset with Arjuna and said, Arjuna, you are such a strong, powerful Kshatriya, and you are the best of the best in the bowmanship. You are the best, and there's nobody better than you. I think it is not you, but it is your Gandiva bow, which is useless. Now, of course, Arjuna had taken a vow that if anybody who insults his bow, Gandiva, then the only solution is that he has to meet death. Now, here is Yudhishthira Maharaj, his elder brother, who is offending Arjuna's Gandiva bow. And Arjuna says, dear brother, big mistake. Now I got to kill you. But you're my brother. So I cannot kill you. And because I cannot follow my own vows and kill you, therefore the only solution now is that I have to kill myself. And then Krishna is saying, wait a minute. I cannot have Arjuna being killed. He's my very dear devotee. And I have made promise that I will protect my devotees. My devotees shall never vanquish. And I'll give them my all protection. Aham tam sarva papebhyo. I will free you from everything and protect you. So Krishna is thinking, this is a very, very dangerous situation we have got ourselves in. It's an entanglement which can be untangled now. How? Of course, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is the greatest diplomat as ever. And he says, Arjuna, I have a solution for you. Since you have to kill Yudhishthira Maharaj, but you cannot do that because he is your elder brother, and then on the return, because you cannot do that, you go to kill yourself. So the solution out of this situation is you insult your brother in presence of many people. So when you insult a great person in the presence of elderly and many public, basically, is as good as killing him. So, of course, sorry, before that, what was happening was Arjuna didn't want to kill himself, but Krishna said, if you insult Dhritarashtra, and therefore, he's just as good as killing. So Arjuna said, okay. And he started insulting Yudhishthira Maharaj. And then Yudhishthira Maharaj, of course, great magnanimous person, he says, it's okay, Arjuna. You are a young brother, you know. You are foolish. I forgive you. But now Arjuna is saying, now that I've insulted you, how can I leave? I will have to kill myself. So, of course, I jumped the story a little bit. So here Krishna is saying, got out of one mess, now there's another mess. So Krishna is saying, okay. Arjuna, the best way to come out of this is free yourself and insult yourself. Therefore, is as good as killing yourself, because for one who is honored, dishonor is worse than death. Anyway, so the point is that there is always solutions to everything. The killing is not the answer. Unless and until you are Hiranyakashipu or Shishupal, then of course killing is the only solution, because Krishna wants to finish them off before they create any more trouble for his devotees. So the point is that in this particular section of the story of Sakshi Gopal, the Brahmana, the elder Brahmana, is very much concerned to give his daughter in marriage to a person who is going to be qualified. So we have to learn this in our own practices, that when we are following our Krishna conscious path, obviously not everybody is going to become sannyasis. So therefore Prabhupada said in one statement that all my disciples should all my men disciples should be brahmacharis, and all my female disciples should get married. Now, this is a question of how to fulfill this objective. If Prabhupada wanted all his disciples to be brahmacharis and all his female disciples to be married, then how is it possible to execute this desire of Srila Prabhupada? Of course, Prabhupada is also very, very powerful person, empowered by the Supreme Lord himself, is that when he said, all my disciples must be, men disciples should be brahmachari, means that when you get married, You still have to follow the brahmacharya life. Now, sometimes people may not like this, but this is fact of life. Unless you read chapter in the fifth canto, the chapter of Forest of Enjoyment, then you will get a depth insight of what is your duty as a young man and young lady. But we won't get into that right now. The point is that Prabhupada, when he said that, means that the young man should get married. But according to the principle of Dharma, and the principle of Dharma is that when you get married, you look after the wife with as best as you can, and the wife also looks after the husband as best as she can, and you happily go along your life, and then within that, you are permitted to interact between each other to just procreate a child. And that's your lot in life. Unless you want more children, then so be it. But, of course, it is recommended that one should only beget children according to their capacity to take care of the children. Because, of course, again, Srila Prabhupada is many times giving that lecture on teachings of Rishabdev. Guru nasasyat, pita nasasyat, janani nasasyat. That you have no right to be a father, a mother, or a guru if you cannot deliver your dependence from the cycle of birth and death. So a guru is in a very serious position that when you accept disciples, you have to train your disciples in such a way that they actually become free from repeated birth and death. Otherwise, you have to keep coming back again and again and again to deliver every one of your disciples. And unless until every disciple is delivered, you have no choice but to keep coming back. And therefore, you have to be careful how many disciples you take and who you take as your disciple, which is a dangerous situation to be in. At the same time, you know, when you are married and when you have children, you have to deliver your children. Otherwise, it is going to be a very, very dangerous situation to be in. If you cannot deliver your children, then it is following a dharma. And maybe, again, same like the spiritual master who has to come back to deliver his disciples. Similarly, when you have children, you know, if they are not delivered in this life, then you have to come back again and deliver them again and again and again and again until everything is done and dusted with. Therefore, we have to be very, very careful. Anyway, the point is that the principle of Dharma has to be followed. So even within the discipline of Krishna consciousness, Krishna says, Chaturvarnya Maya system, that these vanas and ashrams I have established, the brahmachari, the grihastha, the vanaprastha, the sannyasi, this is a system of elevation till finally you come to the stage of old age and renounce and be fully attached to Krishna and leave your body remembering Krishna. But during that period, you have to follow brahmacharya. It's absolute necessity. So in a brahmachari ashram or brahmachari ashram, it is very important that we follow the system of brahmacharya. Then in household life also, you have to follow brahmacharya. In vanaprastha, you have to follow brahmacharya. And in sannyas, for sure, 100%, and more than 100%, you have to follow brahmacharya. Otherwise, you are in big trouble. And then that could be considered as a big offense to the Supreme Lord. So anyway, the point is that self-discipline is very much required in the process of Krishna consciousness. And if we adhere to the basic principles which is given to us by Srila Prabhupada, then in our Krishna conscious activities and life, we'll become very, very happily situated. And without any difficulty, we'll make this journey a smooth and happy one. And in the end, when that inevitable end comes, we'll be happily remembering Krishna and depart this world and then go back home, back to Godhead, without any problems of coming back. So on that note, I will stop here. And if anybody has any comments, any questions, feel free. Otherwise, we'll conclude our class for today. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. No questions, no comments. Yes, Rasaraj Prabhu.
One question came up when you were talking about how to help others not to commit offenses and situations to help their spiritual life. Obviously, not to commit offenses on our part, but not to create a situation for them to commit offenses. And I was wondering if I could have an example, potentially, a good example.
Well, there are examples. I mean, I will cite one example. That in the case of my own spiritual master, in the Mayapur GBC meetings in 2006, there were some GBC men were forcing my spiritual master to make a decision about signing an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, to deviate from the instructions given to him by Srila Prabhupada about the Bhaktivedanta Institute. And he said that Prabhupada has given specific instructions. We cannot change them. And if I sign this MOU, then that means I am digressing from the instructions given to me by my spiritual master. That I cannot do. So then they said that we will have to take very severe action against you. So he said, as you like. But I will not compromise on digressing my instructions to me, because instructions given to me by my spiritual master are my life and soul. So of course, some of them, they were very aggressive, and they wanted, because they have probably a different understanding. I would not say that their understanding is wrong, because I'm not here to sit in judgment on anyone. But I would say that they had different understanding or different perspective of what they wanted to achieve. And my spiritual master, he had a very clear idea of what Prabhupada wanted him to do. So anyway, this went on. And then later on, he was in Calcutta, and there was pressure on him. And he said that if I continue, then my godbrothers will create offense against me. That I cannot tolerate, because I do not put my godbrothers' spiritual life in difficulty. So he happily decided to depart this world. So when he departed, that means there is no question of taking any action against him or any offense against him. So that is one example. Another example is, these are facts. Whether people accept it or not, this is true facts, and it's not very palatable. Is His Holiness Srila Gaur Govinda Maharaj. Also, he was being revoked by some of his godbrothers in the GBC, and they had also decided to take some severe action against him. So on that fateful day, he was sitting in his room in Mayapur, discussing Jagannath Katha, and very blissfully discussing about Lord Jagannath. He said, Hare Krishna, and he left the world. So great personalities, sometimes they will sacrifice their own lives for other people's well-being. You know, I mean, this is my perception of two incidents where two great personalities, they took very severe action to give up their bodies. But of course, they did not just give up their bodies in a material way. They were very happy because they thought, whatever I was supposed to do on behalf of my spiritual master, I have done. Now I want to go and join my spiritual master and assist him in wherever he is serving the Supreme Lord. So they are happily joining their spiritual master and continuing with their service to their spiritual master in many of the universities, wherever their spiritual master is. Because this is an eternal relationship of serving the Guru. So that's two examples which comes to me very, very strongly in my heart. And I have learned from those two examples that we should not be in a situation where we create situation where we will be the cause of offense. So we should never create any situation where we create that kind of unsavory situation where offenses will be committed. And therefore, we have to be very, very careful that whatever we do, we missing. I am here for only one purpose, and it's to please the devotees and serve them. Not create hindrance in their life or create disturbance in their mind. So therefore, our own actions and activities should be such that we should not do anything that would make other person upset or even say things which may not be very nice or we could be constituted as an offense. So we have to be very careful on those lines in our lives. Then if we follow that, then always there will be wonderful atmosphere in the association of devotees. And that's why Prabhupada says that devotional practice and activities we do should be done in the association of devotees and in a very glorious way. And when we hear the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we see how the devotees are so eager to serve everyone. One of the pastimes which comes to my mind right now is that when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri and he had many disciples and devotees serving him, and regularly there would be an entourage of devotees from Bengal. They would come to Jagannath Puri. And when the Vaishnavas from Bengal would come, the Oriya Vaishnavas who are serving Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be so overjoyed that here are Vaishnavas coming to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they would go out of their way to serve them and make every possible comfort for them, that they would feel welcomed. And that's the joy of serving the Vaishnavas. And when we serve the Vaishnavas, then you will become very joyous, and the Vaishnavas whom you serve, they will become very joyous, and they will bless you, and your blessings will then take you on the waves of all the way to the spiritual world. And of course, Krishna is there observing everything in your heart and saying, okay, you have done enough. Your doors to the spiritual world are open. Otherwise, we come back again and again and again. So we learn from the pastimes of the Lord himself, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the wonderful entourage he had, how they were interacting and joyously serving. So our practices should be like that, that we should be very much eager to serve and not to be served. You know, of course, sometimes we get into this mindset, I'm a senior devotee. So therefore, moi has to be served. Serve me. For your own good. If you serve me, you'll make advancement. But it doesn't work like that. Dasa, dasa, no, anu das. Servant of the servant of the servant. That is our position. And then unless until you realize that position, that you are a servant of the servant of the servant, you will be in the illusion of aham, ahankar. I am Ishwara, aham Ishwara. I am senior. Honor me, worship me. Do everything for me. And when we are in this mindset, then we get into a lot of difficulties, because instead of thinking that I am an infinitesimal little spark of no value, I think I'm somewhere of great value. So humility is the key in our Krishna consciousness. And if we have humility, then naturally we will be in that mindset of serving everyone. Serve everyone. And I tell you, if you serve everyone, it is a great joy. Serving is the best thing in life. So on that note, we'll stop here because it's 9 o'clock now. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Jai. Grantra Srimad Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Brinda ki jai. Jai Gaur Premanande.